powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost. Here we go
now. All right, we're going to be making the case for and against four names linked to the starting quarterback job for the Seahawks. Two of them on the roster, two of them not. Before I get to that, though, we have a deal. The wide receiver deal. It is not DK Metcalf, though. Terry McLaurin has signed 3 years, $71 million, about $23, $24 million per year. Now, that doesn't exceed any of the top contracts. It doesn't even make him a top five paid player in terms of average annual value for his contract, but it is yet another wide receiver deal done. Bump, your reaction?
My reaction is that sounds about right. 24, 25, 26 is what I was expecting right there. I think we're hearing it was a $28 million signing bonus. That's where you really got to pay attention to, is like how much is he going to get up front. I think that determines his hit on the salary cap as well. So, No, that makes sense. So now I expect DK to ask for 24 plus.
Right.
Maybe 25. You look at their career over the years, McLaurin has 3,090 yards. DK has 3,100 yards. Terry has 16 touchdowns. DK has 29. So
yeah, I should also add, it's important. I'm glad you mentioned the $28 million. That signing bonus is the largest given to any wide receiver. So again, not necessarily breaking the bank with annual value, but in terms of money he gets, $28 million signing bonus and 76.4% of the new money in the deal guaranteed.
Yeah, it's all about that money up front. What can you secure right now? And I think that's the way athletes should approach this thing, because you can have a 3 to 4 year contract, but they'll get rid of you after two. So what can I get right now? Good job for Terry getting that money up front. So now the table is set for DK. If Terry has 28 mil up front, I think DK can ask for 29, you know,
yeah,
26 to 29. Right. If he has a 3 year deal, I think DK can ask for a 4 year deal. Now there's negotiating tools for him to use.
Right. There's AJ Brown, who you can kind of see as a comp. And then now there's not, I'm going to go ahead and say a floor, actually. I'm going to say a new floor,
yeah,
in terms of like a 24 minimum. You're offering me 24, so you'd rather have Terry McLaurin, who's incredibly talented. I shouldn't say it that way.
Ball player.
He's a great ball player, but I think DK has more on his resume to be able to say, look, I'm worth at least more than him in my mind, especially at just 24 years old.
Yeah, what DK can say is, look, I score touchdowns. This guy has 16, I got 29. He might have more catches than me, but I have more yards than him. He has a long 75. Longest catch, I got one of 84. Like, there's going to be some back and forth going right here. This excites me, because this just means that we are that much closer to a deal being done. I'm glad Terry and his agent pulled the trigger first, because now DK can sit at the table and have some real numbers to work with.
Are you still expecting this to wait until the start of training camp? Because I feel like that's how the Seahawks typically do business. People are on vacation right now.
Yeah.
But we're seeing some deals get done, some things go through. As far as how Seattle likes to do business, if you had to guess, I'm not saying you're predicting. If you had to guess, you're still expecting closer to July 31st.
Yeah, still close to training camp. Like you said, guys are on vacation. They're not going to rush anything.
All right, we are going to jump into kind of like a little bit of a trial here. We're making the case for and against four different quarterbacks as starter of the Seattle Seahawks. Two of those under contract, Drew Lock, Geno Smith. Two of them not on this team at all, but available via trade, Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo. So the case for and against, I'm going to start with one of the players off the roster and one we've been talking about today, Baker Mayfield. Your case for Baker Mayfield, Bump.
My case for Baker Mayfield, this guy has shown that he is tough. He can play through injury. We know in the NFL, it's only a matter of time before you get hurt. Russell Wilson was one of the lucky ones. It took him so many games, 146 or something like that, before he got hurt. Baker Mayfield showed, I will suck it up for my team. He also showed that I can turn a franchise around and make them contenders. They got into the playoffs. They beat Pittsburgh in the first round. It's not like they just beat some chumps. I mean, Baker has shown growth in his game. Now, you can look at the last 2 years and say what happened last year. I just mentioned he was banged up. He was hurt the year before. He gets you there. So maturity might be an issue, but I feel like every year he's getting better with that. But worst case, what you need on the football field is a competitor. And that's exactly what Baker Mayfield is.
I think of these four quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield is one with, outside of Geno Smith's perfect passer rating, I think the best individual performance we've seen from any of these guys. Mm-hmm. He's the only one with five touchdowns in a single game. And we've seen him ball out for the Browns before, yep. Right? Them winning a postseason game for the first time in however many years, since 94, 95 or whatever, was also because of him. I mean, they had a great team. They had a lot of playmakers, but he was one of them. And things didn't work out, but I think you look at the skill set, you look at the ceiling, and he is one of the two highest of these four. It's easy to see. As far as the negatives, the case against, well, he's at this weird in-between. Like, if you're going to talk about a tweener in terms of, he could be a defensive, interior defensive guy, defensive edge, it's almost like he's that as a starter. Mm-hmm. He's got the skill set and ceiling to be your franchise guy, but doesn't hit it consistently enough for you to count on it. He is young enough for him to be your quarterback for a couple years, at least for a starter, and you don't have to think of a backup plan. But also, he's going to be looking for a new deal. He's not a rookie anymore, yep. So you don't get 4 years of that rookie deal. There's that kind of in-between thing with him, and he hasn't so far, especially of late, been consistent enough for you to say, you know what, I'm betting on the good side.
Here's my case against Baker Mayfield. What type of leader is he going to be? Can he get into the locker room and lead? What's it going to be like when things are tough out there and this line isn't protecting him? You got a rookie on the left side, a rookie on the right side, a third-year guy at guard, an OG at left guard, and a new center. Right? Is he going to be able to galvanize this group and take that knee in the huddle and say, like, all right, guys, things are going wrong, but I got you? That's the thing that concerns me about Baker Mayfield, because I watch him play. And when I see a quarterback that wears his emotions on his sleeve, you can appreciate it at times. And at some times, just like, all right, the play's over. Let's just move on. Like, you have to be the catalyst, the guy that pushes this team through difficult situations, because they're guaranteed to happen. Say what you want about Russell. Say what you want about his approach. He always believed that they were going to win a ball game. I don't know if Baker always believes that they're going to win ball games.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next one here. I'm going with the Seahawks, someone already on the roster, Geno Smith. The case for Geno Smith.
Case for Geno Smith. This guy's been in the league for a while. He knows what winning looks like. He knows what losing looks like. He knows this offense. He has a relationship with all these receivers, except the new guys that came in. He's building that relationship. He has the trust of Shane Waldron. Sometimes as a coach, you take the guy with less talent because you know that he's just going to do the right things. And in football, it's all about alignment, assignment, execute. And I think Geno can get these guys lined up. I think he knows what everyone's going to do. And I think he's going to attempt to do the right things more often than not. Now, you have to throw the football in a tight window, put it over the shoulder, check out of things, and you still have to execute that stuff. But because he's a veteran, because he's familiar, that's probably the safest way to go, because you know that he's going to get everyone in the right spot.
That's exactly right. He's familiar with this system. Pete Carroll has not infrequently favored people who are familiar with his system, in part because you got to buy into the program. It's a huge thing for him. It's not unlike college days. Buy into the program. He calls it the program for a reason. And Geno Smith is someone who, I think, to Pete Carroll has done that, I would imagine. I think, though, when you're looking at, you know, the case against, if we're going to start veering into that territory, the safest option typically means the ceiling isn't the highest.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If you're saying, it's the safest option, what makes it the safest is there's the least amount of variance between, like, ceiling and floor, or maybe someone who's just most familiar. It doesn't typically mean someone who's the best. It's like when you look at items and they're like, best budget option. And you're like, okay, what I'm hearing is not the best option. I'm not calling Geno Smith the best budget option. But what I'm saying is that typically, if you're associating someone with a safe bet, it doesn't mean the payoff is the highest it can possibly be. It just means that the bad return isn't the lowest it could possibly be.
Yeah, that's well put right there. My case against Geno is we know who he is. At least we think we know who he is, right? This guy was drafted in 2013, so that means he's entering his 10th season in this league. And in 10 years, his completion rate is 58%. He's thrown 34 touchdowns and 37 interceptions. His passer rating is 75.7. He's not, those numbers aren't going to change drastically over 1 year. So because we feel like we know who he is, just like you mentioned, that means that ceiling is lower. I don't expect Geno to come out and throw for 400 yards and three or four touchdowns and do what Russell Wilson did a couple years ago to start that year off when they were hot for 6 weeks. I just don't expect him to do that because I'm just looking at his body of work. It doesn't mean he's not a decent quarterback. I'm just looking at what he's done, and I'm saying there's no reason for me to expect that.
Yeah.
So that would be my knock on Geno.
Yeah, it's not looking into the future saying this guy is incapable of doing it.
Yeah.
Again, he's had a perfect passer rating in a game with over 300 yards. Yep. I think he had 3 touchdowns. He's had a phenomenal game. He's also had games that have been bad and games that have been inconsistent, which you could kind of say for any of these 4 guys.
Sure.
So I think that's what you're looking at is like, I'm judging from a past body of work. And whether or not any of these guys are like, that's not who I am anymore, well, that's something I haven't seen yet. So I'm only going on what I've seen from the past, which is what we're going to do for our next guy on this list, Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, Jimmy G, I'm going to start with case against here because he, of any of these 4, has the highest cap hit. Were the Seahawks to trade for him and San Francisco didn't absorb anything, they'd be absorbing some, but let's just say you take on his full cap hit as it would be for the acquiring team. It's $25.5 million. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot because in people's mind, they're like, well, you'd be paying Russell like $35. Well, wait a minute. Because the Seahawks are absorbing some of Russell Wilson's cap and they have dead cap from Russell Wilson, the Broncos are actually paying Russell Wilson $24 million. So you are paying Jimmy G $1.5 million more than the Broncos are paying Russell Wilson. And it's the taste of that isn't so great. It's not a deal breaker. It's not the worst thing in the world. It's just that I don't like it. It's the taste of it.
It's the aftertaste.
That's what it is. It's the eh. I don't like that one. I don't like it.
It's the optics. And here's my case against Jimmy G. Now, as of late, he has had former teammates come out and just knock him. Martellus Bennett and I believe Julian Edelman was the other guy saying pretty much he's not a great leader. That's 2 guys. I guarantee you, 10 years working with Russell Wilson, someone that's been on that team, there are people who are going to say the same thing about Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
There are people who didn't like Peyton Manning, who don't like Tom Brady. Like, you can't expect everybody to like you. And when you're Jimmy G, you're not considered one of the greats. Guys are going to speak out against you. Right? Not too many guys are going to speak out against, like, the all-timers or whatnot. So, Jimmy G, the knock would be that, one, his contract, like you mentioned, and then, 2, his injury history. Like, he's been banged up the last couple of years. An ACL 1 year, high ankle sprain the other year. Like, he's been banged up. Can he stay healthy? And is he worth the actual money? Now, if you cut Jimmy G and you renegotiate the contract, that's a different story.
Now, if you are looking at the positives, it's almost like if Baker Mayfield has this really high ceiling, Jimmy G has maybe the highest floor. Of any of these 4. You've talked about his completion percentage being the highest. It's just under 70% career completion percentage. Now, he's played behind a good offensive line, though I'd say Baker has played behind the best offensive line, but still a good offensive line. He's had great weapons. He's had an offense and an offensive-minded head coach who have specifically catered, much like Sean McVay did with Jared Goff, to make sure, like, how do I make this as easy as possible? He's not a guy that takes a lot of downfield shots. All of that being said, he's efficient. And if there's one thing Pete Carroll would love for a quarterback to do, don't turn the ball over. Be efficient.
Don't turn it over. He has 38 interceptions to 71 touchdowns, 11,000 yards. His career completion percentage is 67.7. Last year, it was 68.3. He's not going to have a game. You know, a guy who just retired who has bigger gains than Jimmy G, but nowhere near the accolades, is Ryan Fitzpatrick. So it's like, all right, do you want the big games, the banger bust, or do you want the guy who you probably know what you're going to get out of him, and you know you have to surround him with other pieces to him for him to be successful? So I go to Vegas. I don't gamble much. I don't gamble big, at least. I'm the middle of the day, $5-$10 table. I'm just going to bet minimum and keep these free drinks flowing, and I'll tip you a dollar.
Ooh.
Like, that's Jimmy G.
Yes.
Right? Middle of the day, gambling, nothing big, tip you a dollar, keep the drinks rolling.
The weirdest thing, sidebar, about Ryan Fitzpatrick is that you could, if you splice together like a 2-minute video of his best plays and like, not necessarily the very worst, but just like bad plays, his best plays, you'd be like, oh, that guy's a Hall of Famer, right?
Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Famer. The worst plays, you'd be like, that guy didn't last a second in the league. It's just so volatile. Let's go to the last one. We'll wrap this up here with Drew Lock. Let's talk, I'll just let you wrap it up. Case for and against for Drew Lock.
Case for Drew Lock. He has had so many offensive coordinators over there in Denver, so it's hard for him to find his groove. As a rookie, he played 5 games, so he was 4-1. He showed some promise there. Like, look, I got the arm talent. I have the mobility. I'm not scared. I saw him stand in the pocket and take some hits to the chin and still deliver a throw. Like, that's some stuff that you can respect. I think that as far as his play goes, as far as his ability, guys are going to respect him off top. Now, the negative is his decision-making. Now, sometimes he stands in there and he throws a football he's not supposed to throw. Sometimes he makes a decision that he's not supposed to make, and he doesn't have the experience. So when you get into these situations, when it's 4th and 3, when you have to win the ball game, when you take that knee, look your guys in the eye and say, follow my lead, will they be able to do that?
All right, and that was a look at the case for and against, the four different quarterbacks potentially that could be starting for the Seahawks, obviously two already on this roster. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, Washington Commanders owner Dan Snyder has not yet accepted a subpoena issued by the U.S. House Oversight Committee investigating allegations he fostered a toxic work culture in his organization. What's the real headline?
In an ironic twist, Dan Snyder is about to find out what happens when someone else doesn't accept no for an answer. Yikes.
You got him there.
Look.
You got him there.
Here's the thing. It's the ability to be like, I don't want to show up. No, I'm above this. It's you know what bothers me about it is this idea that because something was in the past, there's no level of accountability that needs to happen. There is a lot of and was a lot of politicking between either side of the aisle during this hearing that made it feel sometimes like a waste of time. The overall intent, which is to look into this organization, to look into the way it was being run and find out whether there's a way to prevent it, most importantly, and also whether it's still going on. That's an important thing to do, right? Whether or not you think that the process is flawed or that the way the hearings were handled are flawed, it is important to find out whether or not this is still happening because it matters to multiple people within the industry and to people who will be future parts of the industry, particularly young women. And for Dan Snyder to kind of take the tone of, that was in the past. It's over. It's done. Like there was a quote from his spokesperson saying basically like, hey, that was 10 years ago. Kind of like, you know, we've handled it. That's not the case anymore. Well, am I going to take your word for it? Because if there's one thing I've learned from this investigation, it's that I shouldn't.
This is what grimy people with money do. They say if they don't want to do it, no, I don't want to do it. Man, I got a letter from Snohomish County court system the other day saying, look, you got jury duty. I'm going to show up. I mean, messing with the court system. You know what I mean? But his lifestyle and his perception of himself and everything that's around him is completely different than actual reality. Slime balls with money do things like this.
Now, the committee spokesperson has made it clear that they are not going to take no for an answer. They said, quote, we will not be deterred from obtaining Mr. Snyder's testimony, and we remain committed to ensuring transparency about the toxic workplace culture at the Washington Commanders.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, after finding zero takers, Kyrie Irving has decided to exercise his $36 million player option with the Brooklyn Nets. What's the real headline?
It's funny because I have decided as well not to become a professional model. So both Kyrie and I making
a decision
influenced by nothing else except for us. We chose that. So in that way, we are the same.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? And I said, Nate Burleson, yeah, you can have the starting job at receiver.
Right.
I'm fine. You want to be on Good Morning America? Uh-huh. I don't want to do that.
No.
I'm staying in the region,
crazy.
Baby. What are you talking about?
That's wild.
Get
yeah, you chose.
Here.
You chose that.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. It's not a surprise here. I'm going to go back to that statement, which I can't get enough of. Kyrie Irving said when announcing this, normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow. I've made my decision to opt in. See you in the fall.
Like I said, it was almost a good quote. There was some realness there until he threw in on the back end. You know, this reminds me of all these kids now that get on Twitter and say, oh, I'd like to make my announcement to go to all this school. These are my top five. It's like no one really cares that much. Just make a decision and roll with it. You don't need to have a backstory to it and all that. And Kyrie just trying to be so deep and then ends the quote with something so silly. You almost had me, Kyrie. You were this close.
Hear me out. Kyrie should have done the decision where there, you know, where there are three hats in front
it's
of you. Only
hat.
There's one hat. It's just the Nets. Okay. It's like, welcome everyone. Let's figure out what's going to happen here.
Guess I'll go back to where I was employed at.
Sits there for a minute, picks up the Nets hat, puts it on. Everyone cheers awkwardly, like, yeah, I'm down for that.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. in an effort to fill out their roster, as they're going to be some without some guys here. The Mariners have added Carlos Santana, first baseman, in a trade with Kansas City. That move was made yesterday. What's the real headline?
Ty France could be out longer than we think.
This hurts. I'm glad the Mariners are making a move to not put a utility guy at that first base spot, right? Get a guy who's been there, who's done that. I guess he's going to be mainly a DH anyway. His bat has been hot as of late, but there's nothing like Ty France. The fact that they're making this move lets us know it's probably worse than we expected. Ty, get well soon.
Well, and with some of those suspensions, you're going to want those utility guys elsewhere, right? Do you want Dylan Moore at first base if you're going to need him in right field to fill in for Winker?
No, thank you.
If you're going to, you know what I mean, need someone in at shortstop to fill in for JP, I know that can't only be Dylan Moore, but that's who they had at first. They were kind of, you know, work and see if they could make that work. You can't do that anymore when now you have one less guy on your roster. And by the way, a spot that you can't fill.
It's getting real out here, man. All the suspensions, the timing of this whole thing is so unfortunate. We felt like these guys were turning a corner. But then last night, they throw up a dud. You know, Orioles got the best of them. The pitching wasn't great. Bats didn't get going. Cal hit a bomb in the fifth inning to save the no-no. but to disrupt the no-no. But, yeah, man, it's a tough situation for these guys. They got to find a way to climb out of it. Leadership, Suarez, Adam Frazier, these guys who have been there and done that need to step up.
And now it's time to send one of you to a Mariners game. Call 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776 in 1 minute if you're listening on the radio, or 30 seconds if you're on the stream on your phone. Call 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. The first caller wins four tickets to the Mariners game on July 7th when the Mariners open a four-game series against the Blue Jays. First pitch on July 7th is at 7:10 p.m. You can find tickets for that game at mariners.com, or again, be the first caller right now, 206-421-3776, and let us send you there for free. It's Bump and Stacy. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. Coming up next, we have some new potential analysts for Amazon's football coverage.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bumpin' Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, let's take a look around the rest of the NFL. This is NFL headlines. After announcing Carissa Thompson as their pregame, halftime, and postgame host, Amazon is now reportedly pursuing Andrew Whitworth and Aqib Talib for analyst roles.
Carissa, local girl. I remember seeing her on Chevrolet commercials back in the day.
Lee Johnson. Yeah.
Yeah, Lee Johnson. She's doing her thing. Good for her, man. I think she's going to be a great addition. Andrew Whitworth and Talibis. Personalities, right? I see Andrew Whitworth as like that funny uncle who's going to tell you hella jokes during the broadcast. And Talib is just going to keep it way raw with you. He's going to tell you exactly how he sees it. Amazon low-key is trying to put together a little squad to make these games entertaining for you guys.
Now, who do they have total? They're going to have Richard Sherman, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick, do we know whether he's on Thursday night coverage? I think
Yeah, it's Thursday.
So, okay, you've got Richard Sherman, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Let's say you have Whitworth, Aqib Talib, Kay Adams, right?
Yeah.
Weren't they trying to go for Marshawn Lynch? Like, this is going to be the biggest studio crew of all time.
Oh, my God.
They're
going to
have
a bunch of stars.
Nine people on this crew.
For one game a week.
Yeah, and each person's going to get, like, 20 seconds to talk.
Yeah. I love it. I absolutely love it. I hope there's infighting on day one. No, I would love to see this. Is there anyone that you guys, a person currently playing, you cannot wait to see if he moves to the booth?
Currently playing. You know what? Russell Wilson. I want to see what he's like in the booth. Now,
I think he'd be good.
Yeah, I think he's going to be super analytical. He's going to be like super professional, to whereas these guys are going to have, it's going to be a bit more loose, a bit more fun. I think Russell will take it so seriously.
Yeah.
He's going to be like super tight with his stuff. I'm just interested to see how that would look for him.
I want to see if a more natural version of Russell Wilson happens after he's done playing.
Like a Tom Brady, like what Tom Brady is now, opposed to what he was 15
years
ago. Tom
Brady was like, I did enough and I don't really care anymore.
Yeah.
Like now I can just be a little more natural. I don't know that we'll ever see a fully natural person. It's a lot to ask to see a fully natural, authentic person of anyone in front of a camera, in front of a mic. Like it is impossible to be fully authentic. Yeah. But it is especially hard when you're supposed to be representing a team at all times.
Unless we're on like XM radio, then you let loose. You want to see
some
personality or hear personality?
Exactly.
Go on XM.
All right, next story here. Commanders wide receiver Terry McLaurin has agreed to a 3-year extension worth up to $70 million. Now, that works out to an average annual value of about $23.324 million per year, which is below some of the newer deals like that belonging to A.J. Brown. But his $28 million in his signing bonus is the highest paid to any wide receiver.
As I always say, get your money out there, young fellas. $28 million guaranteed. Good for you. More importantly, it gives us some negotiating tools, or DK some negotiating tools, to figure out what's going to happen there. We spoke earlier. We still don't think a deal's going to happen until around training camp, but at least there's something to compare it to now. In a perfect world, Debo would get it done too. And I feel like Debo would probably get more than Terry. So now DK can probably settle right in the middle somewhere and get a nice number he likes.
DK Metcalf, as well as Debo Samuel and Deontay Johnson, still awaiting deals. Of those three, who do you think gets the most per year?
Say it again.
Debo,
mm-hmm.
DK,
yep.
And then Deontay Johnson.
Most per year? Probably Debo.
I would think Debo.
Just because he brings so much to the table. He's a running back. He's a receiver. The run after the catch, the big plays. He is that offense, to whereas in Seattle, DK is a huge part of the offense, but not necessarily the offense.
Yeah, it's hard to say, especially for a wide receiver. You could do it for the Rams, Cooper Kupp. But maybe especially more so with San Francisco, that guy is most of the reason they're there. Because their defense was not as great as they were in 2019. Mm-hmm. They were still solid. They were still really good. But for their Super Bowl trip, it was like, oh, that defensive line's unstoppable. That passing defense is unstoppable. I think teams were completing less than 200 yards per game. Something just absurd. But I think Debo had something like 1,700 yards from scrimmage. I mean, you think about that pivotal third down conversion against Green Bay in the divisional round. That's Debo.
And Debo,
that's why.
He's so thick too, man. Like, he is thick. You see those quads and those glutes. He's 6 foot, 215, 1,400 yards when it comes to receiving, 6 touchdowns. Well, we all know when it comes to running that thing, he is something special as well.
All right, well, Kayvon Thibodeau, the Oregon product selected in the first round of this year's NFL draft by the Giants, says that he's fully healthy. He's going to be ready to go by training camp. It's all great news. But he also has an interesting goal for himself for the season. Quote, if I could average at least 1 sack a game or contribute 5 to 10 tackles a game, then I'll be good.
A sack a game, hey, no, good for you.
A sack a game, 5 to 10 tackles.
5 to 10 tackles. Hey, you do that, you are one of the greatest rookies of all time, and your trajectory is Hall of Fame. A show, but you're supposed to aim high, man. Good for you, rookie. Go get it.
I'm not about to make fun of anyone for having that goal, because, you know, what if he comes out and actually does it? Although, I see a world where Thibodeau, can he stay healthy, does have a phenomenal rookie season.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, you watch his get off, the way he fires off the football, his athleticism, the bend, like all the things that you look for at a guy at his position, he already has it. The knock on him was, can he stay motivated? I think when you make it to this level, you're going to find out real quick if you can, if you can't. And if you can't, you will be out this league. But something tells me he's going to turn it up every week.
All right. We have the 2022 All-Rookie Team. Charles Cross makes the team. Earlier, Bump, you were talking about a rookie who did not make the team, but who you think should. Remind me who it was?
So I had Drake London, the receiver out of USC, was the Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. Then I also had Sky Moore, who we call him Ground Moore. Now, I guess, because of Curtis Rogers.
I mean, dad joke. Days.
You almost killed Bump, I think.
I know.
It was unexpected. I think it caught him off guard. He was like, I didn't think I would laugh
so hard
at this joke.
Oh, which one of y'all hit me?
Still thinking about it.
I was not ready for that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What do you think about the defense having Aiden Hutchinson as their edge? You ended up going number 2.
Naturally. I mean, this guy is probably the most violent player I've seen coming out of college in a very long time.
Do you think that the Lions made the better pick in taking him 2nd, that the Jags should have taken him?
No, I think everything happened the way exactly it was supposed to happen. I think that when you have a top 5 to top 10 pick, you cannot really go wrong unless you're passing up on a once-in-a-generational quarterback who is guaranteed to have some success. And there's not too many of those floating around these days. It's not too many.
All right, Marlon Briscoe, who was the first black starting quarterback in the AFL, has died at 76. That was Monday. He was a starting quarterback in the league more than 50 years ago, also a monumental achievement. He died of pneumonia at a hospital in California. He'd been hospitalized prior to that.
Man, and this guy, we talk about small quarterbacks, he was 5'10". He wasn't a big
man,
dude.
Man, a different time.
Yeah,
a different time. Let me tell you what.
They probably put no limits on height and stuff back then, but He threw for 1,500 yards in 5 games, 300 rushing yards in 5 games, 14 passing touchdowns in 5 games, and then converted to a receiver and was a Pro Bowler at that position and was on that 72 Dolphins team.
Speaking of the Commanders, now we talked about this in headline rewrites, but Dan Snyder has declined to accept the House Committee's subpoena. Now, what happens if he doesn't? Well, you can be found in violation of the court. You can have a warrant out if you decide to evade that subpoena. Apparently, he's still trying it. That hearing's supposed to be tomorrow.
Money, money, money. I wish I had enough money to be like, nah, I'm good. I'm not going to show
love
up.
That.
I'm just going to go to France, take some employees out there. We're going to take some pictures on a yacht and act like all is well overseas.
Just yeah, no problem. Here's the thing, though, that, like, the NFL is part of this investigation, too. We all talk about it as though it's about Dan Snyder and the Commanders, and it is. But they're part of a larger, they're a branch of a larger company, business, and therefore of a larger problem, which is a league that decides to turn its head at times or decides that in order to protect the shield, you cover behavior that's already been done.
Cover behavior by owners. If you're
important to mention,
if you're a
that,
player,
yes.
They want to try to make an example of you, which in, you know, guys deserve punishment, but just make it equal. Make the punishment equal. These guys with money, these owners need to be punished as well.
All right. Now, this isn't about the NFL, but jumping to college football here. According to ESPN, Mississippi State, a bit old here, has given football coach Mike Leach an extension and a raise. We didn't talk about this one earlier, so wanted to get back to it.
Mike Leach, thank you for what you did for Washington State University. Made us relevant. We were top 10 at one point. He's just a different type of cat, though. And I have employees who worked or played under him and say he does his own thing. And he changed the game of football. Like, you can't deny Mike Leach's impact on football today. I guess good for him. If he's happy, I'm happy for him down south.
All right, Pro Football Focus has their 2022 NFL linebacker unit rankings. The number one spot held by the 49ers, but in a nice change for Seattle, they actually cracked the top 10.
Really?
Yeah.
Good. Good for them.
Good for them. How do you think that that group can be? I'll say this. Cracking the fans outside of Seattle, I think, will look at it and say, cracking the top 10 without Bobby Wagner, but how? Because they obviously don't watch Jordan Brooks and they don't know who those other guys are going to be. I mean, how do you see the unit?
Yeah, the unit is good. Solid in a lot of in two positions, and then you have to kind of figure out the next one. I'm talking about Cody Barnes. Let's see what he does. I think he has all the capabilities to be a good starter. Mm-hmm. Jordan Brooks has already shown, look, I can play with the best linebacker in the league and still eat. And then you got Daryl Taylor on the other side. And Uchenna. It's going to be a fun group.
I'm excited to see what this defense looks like with that change in the base defense. So it's time for What's on Tap, powered by Madden Industrial Craftsman. The Seattle Mariners are back at it with Game 2 against the Orioles. Robbie Ray gets that start. First pitch is at 7:10 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 6 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. All right, we're going to have a change of pace in about 20 minutes. It is the dugout. All Mariners from 1 to 2. We are beginning things with Scott Service, the Skip himself, joins us for an interview at 1 p.m. Before we get to it, it's time to head to the station for Hype Train. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Technically the final segment of Bump and Stacy here, these final 15 minutes, but Bump and I are not going anywhere, nor is Curtis Rogers. We're going to stick around, be joined by Shannon Dreher, and begin the dugout, all Mariners from 1 to 2. So coming up in 15, we're going to get that started with the Scott Service Show. Before we get to it, wrapping things up with Hype Train. Curtis, take us to the station. All right, here's how it works. I tell you a trend, a prediction in the world of sports this week. You tell me whether you agree with it. If you are, you're buying a ticket, you're boarding the train. That is a real train that you are boarding and you are ready to buy in. If not, that train's nothing but hype and you're letting it go on by. You are not buying in. You are not boarding it. So here we go. Kyrie Irving announced that he is returning to Brooklyn after not having any kind of like a seek and sign or a trade and sign, seek and sign deal offers from any other team, with the exception of Lakers. Unfortunately, the Nets not really intrigued by any of those trade packages, and so Kyrie stays in Brooklyn. Maybe not the outcome he wanted, but here's the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. Kyrie staying with the Nets is actually the best outcome for him.
I'm on that train. I am on that train. I'm buying a ticket. I'm sitting down. It is definitely the best thing for him. You know why? Because he had no other option. So you might as well stay home. You might as well play with KD. You might as well try to figure it out because you owe that fan base. You were not there. You were a part-time employee getting full-time money and benefits. You cheated that fan base. But when he was out there, he was averaging like 27 points a game. Like, there's no denying how good this dude is. But yeah, it's best you stay home because that's the only place you can go.
All right, the hype train is that Kyrie staying in Brooklyn is actually the best outcome for him. Bumpus is boarding. Curtis, are you?
Any outcome that ends with you playing with Kevin Durant is the best outcome, and this is the best outcome for Kyrie Irving. So yes, I am getting on this train. Where else are you going to find somebody as talented as KD to go play with? There's probably maybe two or three people on Earth that have the skill set as him. Kyrie, you are not going to be an A1 star of any franchise. You're second fiddle, and you're one of the better second fiddles in the league. Live with that. Know who you are, and you might be a little bit, you might be a little happier with your situation. This is your best shot at a title. I mean, we forget a couple seasons ago, the Nets were what, a toenail from Kevin Durant away from beating the Bucks in that series. There is still a great opportunity to win in Brooklyn. Just hope Kyrie realizes it.
Well, there's also, I mean, the Lakers, no offense to your Lakers bump, they're always going to be in there, going to be part of the conversation, but they have some work to do this offseason. There are other landing spots he could have been in, but again, like, are those teams going to put you in the best position to succeed? Are there going to be other younger stars that they want to focus on where you're not getting as much play as you actually think you will and as many minutes as you actually think you will? I agree with you guys. I think this is the best landing spot. It's just whether or not he truly accepted it, it's actually the best outcome for him. Next type train. All right, a couple teams that did not make the playoffs last year in the NFL are capturing plenty of preseason attention. The Philadelphia Eagles are one of those after trading for A.J. Brown. You got young quarterback Jalen Hurts. The Dolphins, obviously, with Tua traded for Tyreek Hill. They're in that conversation. The AFC West has two of those teams, so packed with talent they are. Now, one of them, the Broncos, let's skip talking about them because there's another team that's capturing plenty of attention, a team that's a little more intriguing. The Chargers. Here's the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. The Chargers can live up to the hype this year.
Can they live up to the hype? If they are to do so, it's because of Justin Herbert. 5,000 yards last year. They got Mike Williams coming back at the receiver spot. 1,100 yards there. They got Eckler in the backfield. They have all the pieces, I feel like. And then, who they get on defense, Stace?
Khalil Mack.
They got better on defense.
Who's the cornerback? Josh Johnson? They added a corner that was
it J.C. Jackson?
J.C. Jackson. Josh Johnson.
From the Patriots. They've gotten better. Can they live up to the hype? It's going to be tough because they are in the best division of football, in my opinion. So living up to the hype would be making the playoffs. And I would be a hypocrite if I said they would because I said they might miss the playoffs last week. So
I'm not
boarding that train. I probably should, though.
The hype train is that the Chargers can live up to the hype this year. Bump is not boarding. Curtis, are you?
Boy, you mentioned all the pieces that they've got. A team would dream to have that kind of talent, also that kind of young talent, especially a quarterback like Justin Herbert, who's still on his rookie deal, who is just slinging it every single year, looking like he is going to be that franchise's guy for a long, long time. Something about the Chargers, though, they are never able to live up to the hype. They have never, ever done that in their franchise's history, even with Phillip Rivers, LaDainian Tomlinson, all those guys. In that era, they still fell short every single year. I cannot buy into the Chargers just on principle because of how many times they have let NFL fans down because of the sheer talent that has been on their roster. I want them to live up to the hype. I don't think it's going to happen. I will let this train go on by, too.
I'm going to board this train.
Oh, all right.
I absolutely am. I think that that this is the Chargers' year to get back to the postseason. I think that most people take the Raiders over them and see the Raiders as the better team. And I'm not kidding when I say this because the Raiders typically get the better of the Chiefs. Like the Raiders have the Chiefs number in the same way that the Rams under Fisher used to have the Seahawks number. And it would always be like on some weird special teams play that they'd beat them.
They still have the number for
a very different reason because they're a really good team. But when they were this middling team, they just always managed to beat the Seahawks. Yeah. And I think that that's kind of how people see the Raiders. Of like, you never know what's going to happen. They still come out and beat the Chiefs. But don't forget that last year, that final game deciding who would go between the Chargers and Raiders, that was down to that that game. It was win and you're in, meaning the Chargers were a win away from being there, just like the Raiders were. So do I think the Chargers are going to go to the Super Bowl? No. Do I think they can get in as a wild card? Yes. I'm very high on Justin Herbert. I think he is one of the best quarterbacks in football. Really excited for what he can do this year, and I like that defense, especially under a defensive-minded head coach. Don't see a lot of those guys.
Nah, it looks good. It looks good on paper, but you still got to go out and perform. It's a tough division, man.
It's tough. Yeah, I don't envy anyone playing in that division, because it's just going to be a battle to the end. This hour, Bump and Stacey, is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. It's also the final hour of Bump and Stacey. We're wrapping things up, but we're not going anywhere. The Dugout is next, and we're getting things started with the Scott Service Show.